I want to be able to write about whatever that I want to write about. And because that feels more genuine. That is my genuine creativity.
You're listening to Ink Speak, where storytelling and poetry meet the wonder and magic of living. I'm your captain, author, poet, and unearther of life, Maverick Malone. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. Today, I have an exciting episode for you because I have with me the one, the only, Danielle Coffeine. Not only is Danielle a part of Superbloom Society that we both co-created, but even before that existed, we were friends first. Danielle is an award-winning poet and the author of her first forthcoming full-length poetry collection, If Adam Picked the Apple. I've been meaning to have her on the podcast for a while, but it never worked out until now. And we're getting into, now that I'm getting into season two, and I wanted to have more of these interview type co-hosted episodes where it's just a long dialogue, where we're telling your stories and we're talking about topics that I think everyone will be able to relate to on some level. So for today, I'm sitting down with Danielle to chat all about what it takes to be a writer, her journey, and how she got started. And most exciting, we're going to get all into her new book that will be coming out in early March. We also dive into building resilience, endurance, and pushing past negative thoughts when you're just trying to achieve your dreams and go for your goals. And then she will read us a couple poems from her new book. It's a great one that I hope you will get a lot out of. So let's get into it.
I am so excited for one thing that you're here, that we're doing this. And I'm just going to jump right in. And I want you to tell us a little bit about yourself, like your personal journey, what brought you to writing, maybe like when you started. Just give us your origin story. Who is Danielle?
Okay, well, that is really... That's like hours of over pizza.
Maybe and, the cliff notes first.
Yes, I'll give you. Yeah, no, I'm not actually going to talk for hours. That'd be so boring. Yeah, so I'm Danielle. I live in St. Louis. I have a almost 5-year-old little boy and a 12-year-old mutt who is by my feet right now, keeping me safe. I guess. You all are probably more interested in my writing journey than anything else. I think I've always been a writer. I've always kind of written for myself. I've done a lot of writing in my head that then I never actually wrote down. I think a lot of that is for a really long time, I really didn't think I could be a writer. I just, with the type of books and literature that I read, I would just read that and think, I'm not that talented. I'm not, you know, who am I to write down what I'm thinking or my ideas? And so I think for a really long time, even though I harbored this sort of secret desire to be a writer. And for a really long time, I told myself at some point I was going to do it. And I didn't. I had a lot of imposter syndrome, a lot of anxiety. I tend, since I was a very little girl, to, unless I was like amazing at something right away, I would just quit. I wouldn't do it. I had a very sort of perfectionistic mindset. And then it was actually during the pandemic. It was fall of 2021. So we were about to go into the second sort of pandemic winter. And I was in a yoga class. I think it was late September. And I just heard this little voice in my head telling me that they're like not to make more excuses, that I needed to start writing. And so I signed up actually originally for a fiction writing class. It was a 10-week online class. And I wanted to write fiction, which looking back now is very funny because I don't ever write fiction. And essentially even in that class, I didn't really write fiction. I mean, I wrote the story essentially of my dad's death. So, you know, I changed the names and everything, but that's what I wrote about. And it was such a healing experience to write that story that had happened over a decade before. And something in me just kind of unlocked. And I realized I needed to keep writing. And then more importantly, I needed to really get comfortable with writing absolute shit in order to get to the point where I could write good stuff. And then even then, learn that what I thought was good a year later, I would no longer think was good. So it's been, I've been in this space now for about 3 years of really diligently writing. I have a poetry writing account where I have spent 3 years sharing my writing, and that has been a really rewarding, albeit at times overwhelming and not very healthy experience, because social media can be a little bit of a mind fuck. But yeah, it's led me to so many people and connections. So even though I have a lot of unpleasant things to say about social media, I've had a lot of opportunities because of it. You know, I met you. That's when we're friends, and
we started around the same time.
Yeah, like hiking and writing retreats, and you know, the poem that I had published and won an award, it's because someone, a small publisher, found it and asked to publish it. And so there is this good that has come from putting myself out there, that I'm really grateful for. And then I guess that brings us to now, which I'm working on my manuscript. I'm editing it, and it's set to be published in spring of 2025.
I'm so excited to read that too when that comes out.
I'm really excited too. I will say, I think I did not expect the ordering of poems to be such a stressful experience, trying to figure out the right order and story that I want to tell. But yeah, I'm really, really excited for it to come out.
So I know you said you started initially like writing fiction. What kind of drew you towards poetry? How did you really get into that?
Yeah, so honestly, I didn't think I was ever going to write poetry. I didn't even really read a lot of poetry, because I was an English major in college, and my experience with poetry was mostly a lot of old white men, you know, writing.
That was my experience as well. Yes.
I was kind of like, okay, some of this is fine, but I don't really feel anything with any of this. And so I remember when I was starting, Joy, you know, started this class, and I started kind of seeking out good writing on social media. And I kind of discovered that there was this whole poetry writing community. And there, I mean, obviously you kind of have the stuff that's, you know, a sentence or two sentences, and that doesn't, you know, feel really poetic or thought provoking. But I started finding these incredible writers, and I thought, well, wait a minute, is this, like, what is this? And so then I just went down the rabbit hole and started reading, you know, more contemporary poetry, a lot of poetry from poets all over the world, a lot of female poets, a lot of BIPOC poets, like really trying to immerse myself in it. And I realized that I actually love poetry, and that a lot of kind of the thoughts that I had been having when I was out walking, it was poetry, right? Is sort of what I was writing in my head, unbeknownst to myself. And so, I'd say it's been about 3 years, around the same time that I started writing poetry, was when I got into poetry. And so that was an interesting experience, because I really didn't, if anyone had told me when I was 30 years old that I would be writing poetry, I would have started laughing. But like, absolutely not. Yeah. And I think too, you know, I write a lot of prose poetry, so I think some of it people would say is poetry. I think some of it, you know, sticklers would say is more prose. So, but yeah, I throw it all in the poetry bucket.
That's one thing I love about poetry. For me, anyway, I kind of view it as no rules kind of thing. So the poetry we grew up with, a lot of the traditional poetry, that stuff did not resonate with me either. And I am also someone who wasn't really into poetry until much, much later, and was coming across these women online who were writing these beautiful things. And was my exposure was just like such a varied difference than what I had growing up. And I love to see poets breaking those rules of what traditional poetry looks like. And I think that really expands its readership as well. And I write poetry a lot for healing. That's one of my main reasons. What would you say is your biggest like takeaway from poetry? What does poetry do for you that keeps drawing you back to writing more and more of it?
I think for me, poetry is how I make sense of the world. I really I'm extraordinarily sensitive. I knew I was sensitive growing up, but I don't think I understood the depths of it until I was much older. And For me, poetry is a way to, as much as possible, convey through language how it feels to exist in my mind on this earth. I think there's definitely an element of healing through a lot of it. A lot of it can feel very cathartic. But yeah, I think for me, really a lot of it is just, it's how I make meaning and how I make sense of the world.
I love that. I feel like I do so much of that in my writing as well. And just simply to preserve moments in time, I kind of see it as like a written photo album almost.
Yeah.
So I want to go back to, since we started around the same time. This is how Danielle and I met, was through the Instagram poetry community. I don't even really remember how we kind of stumbled upon each other.
I think you sent me a DM, or you started commenting on my poems,
and then
you sent me, I think because of what I was writing, you DM'd me and you were like, hey, tell me about you. Because I think something that I'd written reminded you of kind of what you were going through. I think at the time you were going through your divorce and all that kind of thing. And so we connected through our sort of lived experience, if you will, of what we were navigating, you know, with young kids and relationships ending and what that looked like. And I think sort of we were both on a path of reclamation.
Yeah. And I think that's the beautiful part of online spaces like that, the connection. And there's also that darker side that I kind of want to talk to, because we did start around the same time and you have now like 21,000 followers, I think, or something, like a very large number. I'm still struggling to make it to 2. And I know this is something I kind of reach out to you about often, about like dealing with this kind of imposter syndrome that comes up, this comparison that we have on Instagram. And there's so much we don't know. And I feel like you can shed some light here on this, because it can be so hard to get past our own barriers, our own limits, to even like take those first steps to share and like start the thing in the first place. And I know sharing online for me with that, like an anonymity, almost that protection of a screen, like it felt a little bit safer to put yourself out there to begin with. But I want to talk a little bit about like the numbers game, like why the numbers don't even matter, and how you kind of deal with things like trolls and nasty comments and the stuff that kind of does come with a bigger account and a larger reach.
Yeah, so those are a couple of really sort of good questions. And I know you and I have talked a lot about this. So if I skip over something you want me to say, don't dig in. I don't want to miss anything. But yeah, I think, so first with the numbers, right? Whenever you get a comment or a new follower, it's this little dopamine hit and it feels really good, but it's really temporary. And I think everyone is comparing themselves to others. And I will tell you, some of my favorite writing accounts on there don't even have 1,000 followers. So I think, you know, there are so many things at play. You have an algorithm, you have what is shareable, right? People are more likely to share something short, something that's quick, not something that's going to take a lot of time to read. People are scrolling so fast through TikTok and Instagram. It's not really a platform of, you know, really sitting down and thoughtfully spending a lot of time engaging with anything. So I certainly think that there are certain writers who, because of that, will benefit. I think too, you know, there's so much luck, right? You happen to have someone with a massive following share a poem or something, and that can be almost a snowball effect. You know, I had last summer, I had, it was Rachel Hollis, who has 1.5 million followers. A poem of mine was recommended to her through Instagram, right? She didn't follow me, and she loved it. And then she put it in her stories and literally told her followers to come follow me. And I got 1,000 people in a day, which had never happened. And then of course, you know, that feels really nice, but these people are following me just because she told them to, not because they found my work and were thoughtfully engaging with it or any of it connected, you know, for all I know, right? They later on were like, oh, none of this resonates. And so I think you just have a lot of things like that. And then, you know, it can be really tough because no matter how many followers you have, that doesn't mean that that's how many people are engaging with your work or even seeing your work. So you mentioned, you know, I have almost 22,000. I'm about to hit that. But there are times where I post something and like less than 10% of that sees that. There are times in my stories where I will share something to my stories, and I have had times where 3,000 people see it, and then I've had times where 300 people see it. So it's not consistent at
That is
all.
so
And
random.
it's so random, it's so
Isn't
wild. And I think
it?
what's really hard with it, right, is especially for those of us who are trying to market our writing or share our writing or have books, because of that, we're having to market ourselves, which I think is, most of us don't enjoy that. Most of us just want to write and we want to be like, here's our work, and everyone who's following it sees it. And it's really draining. I've actually been, I know I reached out to you recently. I've been really thinking about how I want to use social media. I've built this platform. I've benefited from it to an extent. I still want to use it, but I can tell that it's not good for me, the amount that I'm on it. And I actually came up with a plan for myself for how to really sort of more strategically use it and to really be on there significantly less often. So I'm still kind of engaging. But I'd rather be writing. And I think this there's the I'll share this. This happened the other day. I wrote a poem that I loved, right? Something new. And I called my partner and I read it to him. He's like, this is one of my favorites that you've written. Like, I was so excited. And I posted it on Instagram and it just like flopped. Like, I don't think anyone really saw it, like nothing. And so I ended up taking it down. And later in the day, like 5 hours later, I was talking to my partner and he said, I don't think He said, you were so excited about this. You were excited about this. And because because you become dependent on that sort of reaction. So I'm in the middle of starting a Substack essay called Why I'm Quiet Quitting Social Media, because I think that's really sort of where I want to be, in a space where I'm doing the minimum amount that I need for to maintain community, to continue sharing work, but really just I don't want to put that much energy into it. And I've seen more and more writers and creators share things like this, right? Like, I'm taking mental health breaks, or share that, they have 70,000 followers or 300,000 followers and so few people are buying their books. And so I think it's like all of this work into building up these followers, and that doesn't necessarily translate to sales. And so, it can just end up feeling like a lot of time and energy. And I mean, it's all free work, right? Like, these artists, these creators are creating all this free art and not being compensated. And I mean, not everyone, but a lot of artists want to be compensated at least a little bit for the work they're doing. I mean, we spend a lot of time writing and creating and doing all
Yeah,
that.
I think that's why
So
we're seeing that kind of mass exodus from people from Instagram to starting Substacks, or being less on Instagram and then moving to Substack because you can more easily monetize it. And it's a platform like for writers specifically for that. And it doesn't have the kind of seedy underbelly I think that Instagram specifically has with all the rat race with the numbers and the followers and the likes and all that. And like you said, like the follower numbers can be so misleading. And that's
So
something you've been able to really shed light on for me, being like, no, just because I have this many followers doesn't mean anything. People are still not seeing my stuff or not engaging. Wow.
So I think I think that's important for people to know, that there are times where I get great engagement and then there are times where I don't. And I think too, to a certain extent, social media can stifle your creativity, right? Because
Absolutely.
you don't even realize you're doing it, but then you start to almost just keep creating this stuff, right? That's more likely to be shared, or people are more, and honestly, as a like, I don't want that. I want to keep evolving and growing. I've been writing poetry for 3 years, but I have a lot of different ideas and kind of a different direction that I want to go with some of it. And I'm excited to explore that without constantly worrying, oh, well, this, how is this going to perform? Because I think that then you end up almost sort of like putting a muzzle on yourself. And I have no interest in doing that.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I kind of have to do the same thing at certain points and do these little mini social detoxes and distance myself from that. Because I've done that too, where I've like been really excited that I've written something and then I'll share it and it's just like crickets. And then we start to doubt ourselves about that. And it has nothing to do with like we initially loved what we wrote and shared it, but because we're sensing that other people, for whatever reason, don't like it, and put kind of making up stories in our head, because that's honestly probably not what's happening. It's just that the algorithm isn't showing it to people, honestly. But I think it's so important to maintain that, like, we are first and foremost creating for ourselves. And if it's something we need, then there's a good chance somebody else out there needs it too.
Well, and I think it's both, right? Because I will say, you know, like, yes, I am creating for myself, but I think many of us feel this way, but like, I'm also creating to connect. Like, I want my work. Like, I think as a writer, if you write something and like no one relates to it, you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah. We want to share our work. We want it to be seen and read.
I think it's really finding more of a sweet spot where you can have that, okay, yes, you want the external validation, but really, really leaning into cultivate that strong internal reinforcement and like internal motivation. And I think that's really something social media doesn't encourage, right? Social media is all about, what do other people think? How are other people responding? So it's really externally focused, which I think, like I said, I don't think that that's good for creativity.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's more of a, I like it more for just the community building aspect of it. Like what we've done, or what we're trying to do with Super Bloom, and
yeah,
bring
exactly,
people together.
Exactly.
And then take that from online and bring it to in person, which is kind of like the magical portion for me.
Is why you should probably move to St. Louis.
I would love that. I would love to get out of here eventually.
Yes, please. I mean, that's how I feel.
So what would you say has been the most challenging thing for you along your writing journey?
As much as I hate to say it, self-doubt. You know, I quite often will look at writing and think, who am I to do this? This is not that good. Like, I very much, I'd say, I mean, definitely imposter syndrome. That's really the toughest thing for me. There are a lot of times where I've sat in writer's workshops, or where I'll read other writing and I just think, oh my God, that's so incredible, or everyone else in the room is better than I am. And it's this really uncomfortable place for me to be, especially because, like I said, when I was a child, I very much, like, anything where I didn't excel, or wasn't the best, I should say, I bolted. And so it's been really a lesson to make myself in all of those situations work through it and say, okay, even if this story I'm telling myself, it's true that I am the worst writer in the room, what can I learn from these other writers? Right? I think the stories in my head are often, you know, much harsher than reality, but I really try to change and sort of shift my perspective. And same thing with my writing. You know, a lot of times I look back on things I wrote and I think, I don't know if I really like that much, but I remind myself, I'm evolving as a writer. You know, everything, what I wrote 3 years ago versus 2 years ago versus a year ago versus what I'll write in 5 or 10 years, it's all progress and growth. Yes. And so that's really how I have to remind myself that the more I practice, the more I flex my writing muscles, the stronger they'll get, sort of like with anything, right? And so, but I think that's been the hardest, because it is, it has been tempting at times for me to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I will say this is where the external validation can be helpful, is then typically when I get in that headspace, I'll have someone reach out and say, this poem meant so much to me, or this piece is exactly what I needed right now. And then it reminds me, oh, I'm writing something that other people connect with. And I know you said that too, right? People have shared with you about your work and how it resonates. And even if it's not happening often, just it just takes, I think, I actually had that happen. Well, actually it was today. I was not in a great headspace. And a friend of mine, who actually she's like an older sister. I look up to her. I think she's brilliant. She sent me this long text message and she said, I just read your Substack essay. when men say dumb things to me. And she was like, "You're so brave. I was just having this conversation with a colleague about like standing up." And I just thought, oh, and I told her, I said, I just needed that. Like, thank you for taking a minute out of your day to say that. And I think that's one thing I would really encourage anyone who's a reader of writing or any kind of art. No matter who people are, like, go tell them that you like their work or that it resonates, because it really does make a difference. And I think many of us struggle with imposter syndrome or thinking, oh, am I, as talented as I want? I mean, I don't think talent is the right word, but you know what I mean. Just so and that's one thing I try to do too, is when writers write something that really resonates, I tell them, I say, I love this, and maybe they see it or
Yeah,
maybe they don't, but
it means
I
so
think
much.
we could do more of that. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be the difference between like somebody in a low moment as the writer being like, "Oh, why am I doing this? Nobody, this doesn't matter." And it takes that one person to send you a message that's just like, "Wow, this helped me out so much. This resonated. I was in a really low space." And then it's like, "Wow, what I said really helped someone." And I love when I get feedback like that, because it puts it back in perspective, like, oh, this is why I'm doing it, because I want to help people. I want to reach people and inspire
Exactly.
people and impact people.
Yeah.
And I know, going back to the imposter syndrome, I know we've both struggled with this, and like those lessons that we get where it's a test of, okay, how committed are you to this thing? And you shared with me where you were, because on your Substack you host writer circles, and there was I don't know if it was the first one or one of the first ones where you showed up and you were the only one, like nobody came. So can you tell us a little bit about that story? Because I had a similar experience, but like an in-person thing with the open mic that I host.
Yeah, so I host as part of my paid Substack these monthly writing circles, right? And I think I have people who pay who that's like they're not interested in that, but I was like, every month a different poet will read poetry. I'll do some prompts. I put some time into thinking through it, and the very first one I did, no one came. And I remember sitting there and thinking, okay, I can do this two different ways. I can either think, oh my gosh, no one likes me, no one wants to write with me, like what the fuck? Or I can say, well, this was 90 minutes of dedicated time, and I can sit here and I can write and I can read the poems. And that's actually something like a way that it's changed my mindset with everything. I do my monthly writing circles, and I do a different poet, and I tell myself, even if no one showed up, it wouldn't matter, because I'm spending time reading new poets, and I'm digging into their work, and so it's improving my writing and my repertoire of poetry that that I'm familiar with, and then I spend time writing. So that's sort of how I've shifted it. And I think you told me a story. I can't remember who it was. You said someone who like went and did a talk and no one showed up,
Yeah, it was
and
Jay Shetty.
yeah. And then he was like, okay, well, I'm just going to do it anyway. And I think that's the thing, is it's so tempting when no one shows up for something or no one signs up for something you're offering to think, oh my gosh, no one wants this, and then just stop. And I think what I've learned instead is to say, okay, well, how can I grow and learn in this? And then you can always pivot, right? You can always think through, like, if people don't sign up for things, there can be a myriad of reasons, but you can always shift and evolve, and I think that the thing is just this sort of relentless pursuit and believing in yourself, and I don't even know if it's believing in yourself, it's like believing in your dream and just consistently moving forward. And that, yeah, it was, I kind of laughed when it happened, and I that shift in perspective really helped me, because I just thought, well, no matter what, I have this time to write, so I might as well spend it writing.
Yeah, so it's turning those kind of experiences into a positive and extracting the lesson, which is what I do in like everything. But for me, mine was an in-person thing, because I host this open mic for poetry once a month, and I've only done maybe like three so far. But if I had not invited like like my boyfriend and some of my friends, I think at one of them there was, if those, two or three people had not come, it would have just been me up there and maybe the one person that just came into the store and just happened to be there. But I kind of do the same thing as I tell myself, I use it as like a practice. So I'm up here, I'm going to be practicing how I'm reading, how I'm, you know, presenting and using that time, even if nobody at all shows up, I'm still going to show up. And I think that for me is like my definition of success, which is just continued growth and using these opportunities for what they are and letting that expand us. And it's always going to be an opportunity to kind of battle that imposter syndrome stuff. So I think there's so much growth and potential there if we just keep showing up for ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. It's the keep showing up, right? It's the, okay, gonna get dressed another day and keep going.
Yes. So what advice would you give to others in our position? People who are showing up for themselves and doing the thing, but they're not seeing any growth, or if they're not seeing any kind of return on social media or engagement on social media, if they're getting rejection letters, what advice would you give to an aspiring writer to just keep pushing through?
Yeah, well, I would say first and foremost, focus on the community piece, focus on connecting with other people and other writers, because that's huge. And then don't focus on as much as you can, don't focus on the followers or the numbers or any of that. And you spend time engaging. I will say early on, my first year, I engaged with I don't have as much time now, but like, well, I don't know that I even did then, but you know, it was during the pandemic. It was like, I spent hours, so much time.
It's like a full-time job, honestly, like
yeah,
maintaining.
It is like a full-time job, but I will say, reach out to other writers, connect with them, say, I love your work. Right. And because then they start to notice you. Like, don't just get on there and think, oh, people are going to read my writing. You need to try and build community and connect with other writers and see what they're doing and support them. I think that's the first thing I would say. I would say outside of that, you know, take classes, find a writing community where you're writing or sharing each other's work or hyping each other up. I know you and I spend a lot of time hyping each other up, you know, when things are not going the way that we like. And so
yeah,
I
that would be my advice, is find yourself a hype girl.
Yeah, like find the community,
yes.
But then don't just focus your writing on social media. I really would, there are so many lit journals, you know, there's, they're called Chill Subs. They share all these different literary magazines and places where you can get published, and they're an incredible resource. So I would really say, don't put all of your eggs into social media. I really sort of strategically focused on social media for a while because I didn't want to send stuff out for publication, because I wanted to spend time just kind of finding my voice in poetry. But that's actually my next plan, is once I finish this manuscript, I plan to start submitting to journals, and I am prepared to be rejected all the time. I'll save all my rejection letters, but I would say just really focus on building community, focus on finding the people whose work you resonate with. And even if starting out, you just have a handful of people hyping you up, that's all you need. It really, and
quality, not quantity.
There is also something I will say about when you're in obscurity, right? When you're not, when you don't have much knowledge, you can try stuff, right? No one's looking at
yeah,
you.
There's a sense
you
of
can
freedom there.
Test. There's freedom. It is very different when you're following builds. And I've watched it happen with other writers as their platforms grow. Is they're less likely to share things that they might have been willing to share when they were smaller. And it's not everyone, but you see it. And you start to get backlash, you start to get, you know, trolls and all of that kind of thing. And so I think you have to kind of protect yourself to a certain extent, and that can shift what people share and what they do. So think of it as an exploratory time, as a time to really test out, have fun, and connect with people.
Okay, so I want to switch gears here and talk a little bit about your actual writing. You and I explore a lot of the same themes, like reclamation and empowerment, mental health, a lot of mental health. And now you're dabbling a little bit in my wheelhouse, which is the love poetry, which is my jam. So I'm super excited to read more of that from you. But
your love poems are beautiful and very romantic. I think some of mine are kind of dark.
And I know, like, both of us write a lot about the women-centric experiences, the female experience, and I know that resonates with so many women. Has there been any one particular poem that stands out that you've written that was really vulnerable and maybe a little bit more difficult to share publicly that maybe tackles some of these deeper themes or something respective to the female experience? Something that's like really raw, that some of those stuff can be really hard to put out there, knowing like your coworker is going to read this or somebody that you personally know might read this.
Yeah, for sure. I think early on, some of the pieces about my eating disorder recovery were really challenging to put out, knowing, you know, family and some colleagues and people might see that. I think the other one that I can think of that felt really vulnerable was the one I shared. I think it's actually one I'm reading on here later about selling my plasma for money, which is something a lot of people in this country do. It's actually illegal in a lot of countries. And that felt really vulnerable to write about that experience. I did that when my son was like 18, 19 months. And to put that out there, you know, was uncomfortable. And especially because I had a job, but the reality is that in our country, having a job does not mean that that covers all of your expenses. And especially, you know, as I have split custody with my son's dad, but we make about the same. And so there's no child support either way. And so it's very much all on my own. And just like, you know, he's on his own. And so, that felt vulnerable. And then I shared that. And I will tell you, I mean, it's heartbreaking, actually. If you go in and read the comments on that post, there's dozens and dozens of people, I think like the 80 or 90 that like shared, you know, about their experiences with that. There was one person that shared that they remembered their parents going to sell plasma so that they could buy pizza for them to have for dinner. Oh, and wow. I just thought,
and that really speaks to like just the state of our country too.
And I think it's, you know, we think of it as, oh, it's not that sort of big of a deal, but it's very dystopian, right? When you're selling any part, because it's different, like blood you donate, right? You cannot sell blood, that's illegal, but it's not donation. Like, people are doing this out of necessity. And a lot of times these places you tend to find in neighborhoods where people are more disenfranchised, or who don't have as many resources. And so, yeah, it's a really sort of disturbing experience, and one that I didn't know much about until I did it. And it was hard because I can run anemic. And so I had to, you know, I was like pumping myself with iron to try to be able to donate. So it was vulnerable, but I'm really glad that I shared it.
Okay. So we should probably jump into like the vulnerability and the courage that it takes to publish an entire book. And talk a little bit about your book, because you have your first full-length poetry collection coming out, If Adam Picked the Apple, being released next year, March 8th, right?
Yes, so it's the release date is on the International Day of the Woman. I actually requested that because, as you know, this is a little bit of a feminist manifesto worth of poetry. So I requested that and they agreed. So I was really excited about that.
I love that. I think that is a great intention to kind of marry that to your book and the themes that you're going to talk about. So you sent your book off, like your manuscripts, to your editor, publisher.
As you know, marketing anything is like the worst. Like, it's so uncomfortable for us because we're writers. Like, my friend was over here earlier with me and Jack, and she was like, have you thought about making like reels or like having people share? And I'm like, I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm not a I feel that.
Creator. Like, I'm a writer, and it's So it's just, it's like really, even like I think, like I told you, I'm gonna do a monthly giveaway for pre-orders. And I did that because I thought that will make it fun for me. Like that will make it fun for me to continue to talk about pre-orders. And now I just have to hope that each month enough people actually pre-order that I'm like not out money doing this. But I think for me that feels more fun because I know it's part of it. I know, but it feels so uncomfortable to be like pre-order, pre-order, pre-order. And even though I've seen other people do it, I think, Mav, you and I've talked about it. It almost feels like being like, pick me, please choose me, please choose me. And then if you're not chosen, it's like, okay, like I maybe, you know what I mean? Like there's a lot of stuff wrapped up in it that's just deeply uncomfortable. And I've had conversations with Dan even recently, because I said, for like 2 years now, because my first year it didn't really happen, but like people be like, I can't wait for a book. And I'm like, okay, where are all of these people who said that? And he was like, yeah, but you have to, like, he's like, Danielle, like social media has made it where people are just so used to getting great art for free that like it's really hard. It takes a lot now for someone to be willing to pay because they're like, well, I've gotten it for free. Why would I pay for this? And that, I think, for those of us who have spent so much time and energy and had people tell us how meaningful something is to then realize they're like, well, but I don't really want to pay for it. It's kind of like, okay. It's also this kind of shift in the world that exists. I mean, I went through my Instagram and took down all of my poems that are going in the book, just every single one, because I was like, I don't want them on here, that way. But yeah, it's tough. Have you navigated that?
I mean, I think that'll be, I like the idea, like you just said, of taking down the stuff that's going to be in your book. I can see myself doing something like that too. But I see this like with Substack, I'll write something and I'm like, this is really good. And there's certain things that I do give away for free. Like I have the art house sector on my Substack. Those are free. But like there's stuff that we spend so much time on. And it's like, well, I also put time and energy into this and I deserve to get something out of it as well. It's an exchange. And you don't want to give all your stuff away for free because then people do just kind of start to get conditioned to just expect that.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's hard, right? Because there are times where you put a paywall up and no one pay, like no one,
So
right? And then
I
you're
have
like,
that with my Substack. I don't have many people, and I'm like, well, you know what? I still like, I believe in me. I feel like this is an investment in my future, and I have to tell myself that I think I'm worth this. So if the people aren't there yet, then I'm just going to keep going along. And eventually, like I said, like we'll eventually find our audience. Our audience will
Oh
find.
yeah. I mean, I think that's the hope, but I've certainly had that where, I'll paywall something and I don't get any new paid subscribers. And so then it's like, okay, and you and kind of to your point, you and I are each other's, two of each other's hype people. You keep going, but I think I sent you that post, right, by one of the authors on Instagram where she's like 100,000 some followers. And she was like, I wish I'd known these things like before I got into publishing. And I found it so validating to read through the comments because so many people were like, yes, same, me too, right? I think this idea of getting to write and have that be sole income, like that is so rare because a lot of writers also teach or do other things or edit or write, like they don't
I
just
mean, unless
write
you're J.K.
have,
Rowling, you have to diversify and do
I
these other
mean,
things.
or Stephen King, right? Or I mean, there's, and I think that's the thing is it can be really easy to get in your head and think, oh, I'm not good enough or I'm not writing anything really good. So I'll give an example. In the last month, it's really the first time that it's happened this long, but I'm losing more followers than I'm gaining. And like looking at that, it can make you think like, oh my gosh, am I not as good? Like what is happening? But I do know I'm a better writer now than I was when I started, right? My writing is more complex. I feel like I've developed my voice and I'll continue to improve. And but there can be that part of you that thinks, oh, if more people aren't consuming it or sharing it or liking it, does that mean that it's not as good? And I think that's, it's really hard. It's really hard to kind of grapple with that.
Yeah, I think also when you tend to lose followers, I see it as like anything else in life. When we're leveling up, we lose people. Like when you decide you want more in a relationship, you're going to lose people. When you get a divorce, you lose friends. And I think it's the same on social media. When we're growing as writers, some of those people aren't going to be able to come with you, and you're going to lose some people, and then you're making space for these new people that haven't
I
found you
love that so much, Mev. I needed to
yet.
hear that because that's the thing. I'm writing these things and I think, God, like I love this. And then it'll just get, and then but I think back to what I was writing when I first started and I'm like, well, yeah, no, it makes sense, right? It's different. I think it's evolved more. I think too, you know, this book that is coming out is very much, it is an era. It was like 3 years of writing poems about self-reclamation and deconstructing from patriarchy and like ideas of what it was to be a woman in a relationship and walking on eggshells and like there's, you know, and also like body, like what our body should look like and beauty standard, just all of that. And I think a lot of my writing was a lot of that on Instagram. And I think that was like really shareable. And so people can also get into this like pigeonholing you of, oh, I only
Yes,
want to
they will
hear
box
this
you
from
in.
you. And the thing is, I don't want to only write about that. I have other things that I want to write about. And it's actually one thing I really reject because I'll go to classes and they'll be like, well, with your newsletter, so like with Substack, right? They'll say, well, make sure your newsletter has a theme, right? That you're like focused on sort of so people know what to expect. And I was like, I don't, the second someone tells me to do that or tries to, like, I reject it. I want to be able to write about whatever the fuck I want to write about. And because that feels more genuine. That is my genuine creativity. That's where I'm going to write the best. So yeah, I love that. I love what you just said about, yeah, like if people are leaving, okay, fine. Like good riddance and not good riddance, right? Like my writing just might not be for you. Fine.
But you're making space to bring in.
Yeah,
You're like,
I
okay,
love that.
now we
I
have
think
some
that's
seats
great,
in the
man.
audience for you to come and hear my
Yeah,
poetry.
that's right. We don't need people there who aren't particularly interested.
Exactly.
I love
Okay,
that.
so with your book, I just want to talk a little bit about that, like what inspired the collection and what readers can expect, the kind of themes that you might be tackling in the book and things like that.
Yeah, so this collection came together, kind of like what I was talking a little bit about earlier. So this collection is really about sort of 2.5 years worth of work of deconstructing from everything that I had sort of been taught to believe, either family-wise and society around what it is to be a girl and a woman. You know, I had an eating disorder for a long time. While I was writing this book, I went through intensive outpatient recovery. So there are a lot of poems in there about sort of body acceptance and embracing a, you know, like expansion. I think so often women have been encouraged to be small and to take up less space and to walk on eggshells. And this book is essentially sort of grappling with that and rejecting it entirely. I think it examines, you know, themes of what it is to be a daughter, what it is to be a mother, what it is to be a woman in a, you know, in a relationship with a man, because I'm attracted to men. Fortunately, unfortunately, I don't know. And so I think there's a lot of, it's just kind of an examination in a lot of the poems about that. So it's called If Adam Picked the Apple, which is it's titled after a poem by the same name that won a Pushcart Prize. It's actually being published in the Best of the Small Presses Pushcart 2025 anthology. It comes out this December. And so it was this poem, honestly, it's every time I shared it kind of on social media, it just always seems to hit a chord with people. And then when it was published in a very small press and they nominated it, I was really surprised that it won. Obviously very excited. I didn't even know what a pushcart prize was when they called me, and then I found out later that it was like actually kind of a big deal, and so that was really exciting. But yeah, it's a poem that generates for the most part from women, like this response of like, yes, sort of how Christianity has in many ways, you know, in Western society, so in the United States and in Western Europe, just sort of the misogyny that exists within that and how that's been sort of perpetuated in society just at a foundational level. And it's a critique of that. I feel like I just rambled.
No, not at all.
Word vomited in a really disorganized way, but that's my ADHD brain for you.
I understand that completely.
So, but you read the book. What did you think about the book?
Oh, well, I like to echo what you said. I think it's like a very powerful manifesto for women, and it's very timely for what we're kind of living through right now. And I think we're starting to see kind of the patriarchy like unravel and calling all of these women back towards remembering who they are and not being afraid to finally just openly talk about these things and bring awareness to these things. And like you said, with the title poem, how it resonates with so many, just because it's a very common experience that we feel going through this. So I had the honor of editing, helping to edit your book. So I've had a little sneak peek into the content, and I think, and I've told you this, that like I think it's going to be a really big and important book, and I think it's going to do really, really well. And I hope that everyone listening to this, go get your pre-orders. Go get this book when it comes out. You're going to want to read this. And if you are unsure like about that, I would love to have you read some of your poems, so maybe people can get a taste of like your writing style and some of these themes that you're going to be tackling. So do you want to read a couple poems for us?
Yeah, I'd love to. So I have two that I picked out that I'm going to read. Let me pull them up here. All right. So we have, I'm going to read Sharks first, and then I'll read Atheist. So this is called Sharks. You are surrounded by us, millions of shark women camouflaged as goldfish. When I share plans to visit a rage room, they say, we cannot imagine you angry. Flashbacks of outbursts at 13, 17, 20 spin through my mind before stopping at 23. Like my foremothers, I tempered fury with famine. I pry my ribs open to reveal teeth lining each bone, the famished jaws of a bull shark, row upon row of jagged, hungry rage, one tooth for every moment I swallowed fire. Eventually, I ran out of room. Eventually, we all do.
I love that so much. And if I remember correctly, and I think you touched on this in the poem, this was inspired by like your actual experience in a rage room, right?
So I was going to a rage room.
Or you were going to? Okay.
Yeah, I was going to one. Joy Sullivan had written about going and just like how much she sort of like experienced from it. And I'd seen other people also discuss just kind of the power of going. And so I had a lot pent up, and I tend to go more towards sadness than anger. And I was really curious about allowing myself to actually tap into anger and rage. There's a lot of research that shows that while men will sort of direct their anger outward, women direct it inward. And because of that, you know, women are much more likely to have chronic illness, mental health stuff. Like it's really detrimental. It's poisonous to us. And so, but when because I don't show my anger often, I
think
really
that's a
that
common thing. Yeah. I don't think a lot of women, we've been conditioned to just stuff it down.
Yeah. And so when I shared that I was going, that with people were kind of like, really? Like you're doing that? And you know, for me, my eating disorder was very much how I sort of numbed and repressed and really sort of, you know, self-sacrificed, you know, at the expense of myself. And so that's what this poem, and I loved it. I came up with this idea of like all these women, right? All of us who don't seem angry on the outside, and people would be like, she's so kind and lovely. But like inside, I love the idea of us just having like teeth lining our ribs, right? Just this like rage.
Yeah, I think that's such a powerful image there that you're painting, like with.
Yeah. So I that was a really fun one to write.
Did you actually go to a rage room
Oh, I
eventually?
did. Yeah, I
What
did.
would you, because I've done that too. I've done that one time. What would your experience like? Did you find it like cathartic to just
Oh yeah, I was
destroy
great.
things?
I was really, it's interesting because there was a like a rubber dummy there, and I had a hard time with that, even like a fake, because I don't want to hurt people, like even like a thing, like right? But I will tell you right now, smashing a windshield with a baseball bat was like, I was like, oh, I get why people do this, because it's tempered glass, so you can go at it over and over and over and over, and it was the best. I mean, it was my friend, she was really into a car door, like she was just like smashing a car door. I think the thing that was really the funniest thing is we asked them to play like angry women's music, and the owners, they were like, we don't know what that is, and then they just put on this like death metal, and we were like, okay. The
Not
guy
quite,
dressed
but okay.
like Alanis Morissette, right? Like
Yes.
angry, early 90s rage, but it was really cathartic.
Okay, do you have
Recommend
another
it to
poem?
anyone listening. I do, yes.
Another poem?
Okay.
Okay.
This one is about motherhood. It's called Atheist. I grew up in a town where women martyred themselves for their children. Traded hobbies and poetry for minivans and PTA handbooks, feared the crucifying glances of our elders, renounced selfhood, embraced sainthood. They were baptized, all in the holy name of Mother. Their smiles never reached tired eyes. My mother's smile never reached tired eyes. So when it was my turn, I renounced my foremother's faith, volunteered for excommunication. Carried my child in one hand and my pen in the other. Wrote myself a new doctrine where every hymn is a celebration of messy, imperfect, joyful women whose eyes are marked with the lines of the divine.
This one is just so relatable. I know for me, like I see parts of my journey in that too. And I think this is also such a common experience for women that we just lose ourselves, whether it's to motherhood or to relationship or to communities, religion. And we just totally forget like these parts of us that just light us up and make us who we are.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I've had conversations with my mom and my son's dad, and I we've been split up since my son Jack was 17 months, and so we'll be away and we co-parent really well, and his dad will go on a trip and I'll take Jack longer, and my mom's kind of unfazed. But early on, I remember when I would go on a trip and his dad would watch Jack, my mom would be like, well, is he okay with that? And I was like, yeah, because I do the same thing, right? It's this sort of idea that we as women have to, like, once we become mother, everything is about being a mother. And
Right.
I
And then we
just,
suddenly like lost half of our identity.
yeah, and I just, I really, I reject that. And I love being a mom, but also I have so many other things that I need to do to fill myself up. And a lot of that in particular is around writing and creativity. And I have so many memories of my mom or my friends' moms, just driving us everywhere. And like that was their lives. And I think there are some people who they genuinely enjoy that. And if they do, that's incredible, right? Like amazing. But if people don't, then I don't think we should have to do that. I think we can all define motherhood and make motherhood look like what we need it to look like. We're better parents when we can do that. I mean, obviously, you know, we want our children to feel loved and nurtured and supported, but I just this sort of idea of women and mothers having to be martyrs for their children or their husbands or their families, I find that unappealing. And I feel like for a really long time when I was younger, like that was kind of like an ideal, right? I kept hearing about like people being like, oh, she's so happy making everyone else happy. And kind of these women held up to this, but, and that as I got older, I was like, but are they actually happy? I'm certainly not happy when I'm constantly doing things for everyone else and not doing the things I need for myself as well. And so but it's hard, right? I think depending on where you live, depending on who our parents are, there are places where it's much easier and more acceptable to do that. And I think there are some places where it feels much harder to reject that and to be different because you can be judged. Even here where I live in St. Louis, you know, you have different communities, kind of different areas. And I was having a conversation recently with a mom, and she's like, you know what it's like. You know, she goes, my husband, you know, he does stuff for Mother's Day and my birthday, but I plan everything else. And she goes, you know, like, and she looked at, and I, and in my, and I didn't, and I just kind of like nodded politely, but in my mind, I was like, yeah, no, like that will not be a relationship I choose to be in. Like, absolutely not. But I think that's just such a default, right? Of, well, of course, like the women should carry all of the emotional labor and do all of these things that are invisible. And
Yeah.
just like, absolutely not.
I think because it's just been that way for so long, and that's what gets glorified. And I know for me, like growing up, that was just what I was like presented with. I wasn't really presented with other options of like not having children or be a mom and like also have a career. Because my mom was just, we kind of were her career. She was just a full-time mom. And to your point earlier, like some women, and I think my mom is one of these people, just are completely fulfilled by just motherhood, and that's wonderful. But
That's
there's also
amazing.
this other group of us out there that are not like, we need other things in our lives to also like fill those other pockets. And this idea too, that like self-care and taking time for yourself, whether that's to do writing or some other hobby or traveling, I think there's still a stigma around that is considered like selfish. And that's one thing that I'm like a huge, like I talk about that so often, how it's not, because if you want to be a better mother, like you have to take care of yourself. It's this whole, what is the metaphor with like the putting on your own oxygen mask first before you can help other people. Like you can't pour from an empty cup, as cliche as that is. It's just so true. And I love conversations like this that I think give, in a sense, permission to people listening to just be like, oh, so there are other people that like feel the way I do. And I think it takes away some of that shame of like not being 100% fulfilled by just raising your kids.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I think it's up to kind of all of us to define what it looks like, and it doesn't have to be a one size fits all.
Exactly. Okay. So to kind of work into wrapping up here, there's a question that I'm going to start asking my guests on a lot of on my podcast episodes. This is just kind of like an open-ended, introspective human question. And that is, in your own words, what would you say is the meaning of life? How would you define that personally?
You're putting me on the spot here. What is
To
the meaning of life?
you. So, I mean, there's no wrong or right answer. Like, what do you think we're here for?
I don't know that I believe that there is like a grand purpose for why we are here. I think for humans in particular, because of how we have evolved, I think our purpose is to try and find our way back to community and to connection.
I love that.
I think we have deviated that from that, and we are so unattuned with the sort of symbiotic nature of the natural world. And I think that's our purpose because otherwise we won't survive. Like, we've evolved so quickly. It's quite extraordinary. You know, I think humans, there are many humans that sort of look at other animals and creatures and, you know, observe them and sort of think of our species as the superior species. And yet there are all of these other species that are interconnected and support each other. And I think that like our purpose is to gain some humility and to go back to learn the lessons from other flora and fauna and earth.
I love that so much.
I don't know. Yeah. That's my, yeah.
Okay. And lastly, where can people find you? Where can they get your book? How can they connect with you?
Yeah. So my Substack is called The Understory. They can find me there for my essays. I write an essay about once a week. My Instagram handle is at Danielle Coffeen. So Danielle and then Coffeen is Coffyn. There are pre-order links on my Substack and also within my Instagram bio. One thing that's really exciting with anyone who pre-orders is January, February, and each month, everyone who pre-orders that month is entered into a giveaway for like a basket or a box of all sorts of goodies that are connected to one of the poems in the book.
I love that. And I might be pre-ordering multiple copies now every month. Just so
you know what? You can just, I actually, that's something I was going to tell people. They can pre-order copies to like give to friends,
yes.
You know, things like that. Yeah.
Yes. Because as writers, we need all the support we can get.
We need all the support.
All right. And I will have all of your links. I will have them in the show notes. And I am so happy that we finally got to do this.
I know. Yay.
Thanks so much for coming on here and chatting.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for sticking around until the very end. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support my one-woman show, please subscribe and share it on social media or leave a rating and review. Those are the best ways to show your love and support for my work and will help this podcast to be found more easily, and that in turn helps this whole thing grow. To catch the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram at Mav Malone. Let's connect. My DMs are always open and I'd love to hear from you. If you want to stay up to date on the latest events, books, podcast episodes, and hear more from me, you can sign up for my Substack newsletter, Junk Drawer, at maverickmalone.substack.com. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.